Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And at that website, you can also find podcasts to shows that we've done in the past, which is quite handy. I had a client ask the other day about talking I had recommended that they talk to their children about estate planning and their financial situation, not disclosing dollars or anything, but just having those kind of financial conversations. And I was able to go grab one of those podcasts from the prior show to send on to him. So check those out sometime if you have a chance. Today is February 21st, 2018. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 24,797, the NASDAQ at 7218, and the S&P at 2701. And I thought I'd just point out last week's numbers, because it just drives me crazy when you watch CNBC and, you know, it's breaking news and the stock market's falling and all kinds of crazy things, and they make it seem so dire, like that. Oh, with the indication that Fed rates, the Treasury rates were going to be we were going to see a rate increase. And now that wiped out the, you know, stock rally for the day. Well, last week, the Dow closed at Wednesday, because I have these numbers from the prior week. The Dow closed today at 24,797, and last week it was 24,893. Not a terrible difference. The NASDAQ was 72,18 today, and it was 71,43 last week. And the S&P was 2701 today and 2698 last week. So you kind of got to remember to keep this stuff in perspective. Our topic tonight is listeners' questions. So we're taking listeners' tax questions in particular, so income tax questions. We are live tonight. And if you have a question, you can call in. You can either talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. Lori C. is in the studio, and when you call in, she'll answer. And if you just want to be off air, give your question to her. She'll write it down. She'll bring it into the studio, and I'll answer it as quickly as I can. If you want to talk live on air, then we're going to patch you through. And the number to call in is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. If you do talk live on air, we ask you to mute your radio, you know, turn it down, because if you're listening to the radio while you're talking to me, there's a delay, and we don't want you to have confusion. So mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay. And we do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. Again, the number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And we are talking, taking listeners' questions, tax questions. So I thought, why not have a show on that? Generally, during tax season, I try to keep the topics around taxes so people have the opportunity to call in. But if you guys don't have questions, I've been getting questions, and so have my colleagues at work. So I went around the office asking, what kind of questions are you getting? And I have several that we've been answering, so thought I would share those if if we don't have listeners calling in. But again, you can call and talk live on air with me or off air, 610-758-8810. So we've had lots of questions around medical expense deductions. It's really interesting to me because so often and for years, people say, oh, I don't get the medical. Oh, I don't get the medical. They make some assumptions about not getting them. And then this year, it seems like everyone wants to provide us with all of their medical expenses. So we're going to talk about, when do you get a deduction for medical expenses? What do you have to pay attention to? And these questions that I've been getting quite often, I give kind of the guidelines to people who are asking, and then they're, indicating, oh, I wouldn't qualify, so I'm not going to go through all the trouble of adding up all those co-pays and medical expenses because they might not get the deduction anyway. And what is that related to? That's related to itemized deductions. Some people don't know what itemized deductions are. If you have filed your tax return and have used a standard deduction for years, you might not know what itemizing is. So that's Schedule A. I'm going to talk about that. I'm talking about retirement plan funding and a tiny bit about tax reform. So I have a caller on line one. I have Amy. Hi, Amy. How can I help
Hello?
You? Hi, how are you?
Yeah, hi. This is a question regarding tax returns and garnishment, basically.
Okay.
For years now, due to a student loan, a very old loan, have my name's on it, but it was my husband's loan, and it just never ends. Mm-hmm. And I've been told there's no way out of it. Hmm. And even if there's a hardship involved, there's no way out of it or anything like that. I mean, it's something I don't think I've ever heard talked about on this show, but I don't listen every night, every time. But
right. I haven't talked about it, but I do.
Okay.
I do understand about student loans and how they can sometimes go on forever and ever. I have not seen where it's gotten to the point of having garnished wages. But I expect that the garnishment is going to a particular provider who set that up. So what I would be curious about, that if at some point you actually were in a position where you could come up with some kind of payment schedule, could you talk to them about restructuring that loan? Maybe the interest rate was out of control.
I think my question was more... another question altogether, but this was every time we have our taxes done, they take the whole thing. The federal government takes the whole thing.
I'm surprised is it a federal student loan then?
I guess so. It's so old. My husband got it so long ago, I don't even know, if we even have any paperwork that relates to it or anything like that. We're obviously not rich, so
I would research that, Amy. I would try to. I'm a bulldog about things, and if I were you, I'd be a bulldog. I would go back to your employer, say who's garnishing the wages. It's the federal government. If it's the federal government, there's got to be an advocate or something for someone to track this down for you, and see what can be done with it and what options you have. I think that for years and years, a lot of people didn't have options, and I don't know specifically what might be available to you, but I wouldn't rest until I saw it through to see if there were some options. That's how people get things done. They just don't let go of it. And,
I hear you.
We so often think that if it's the federal government, we don't have options. And it's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease. So I would, some Saturday, pull up that pay stub, check it out, make sure you're understanding what it is, and then trace it to your employer, go to HR, say, tell me what this is with this garnishment. There had to be paperwork with it. And then you find an advocate to see if there's some way that it could be changed. Because what interest rate might it be at, And make sure that is indeed what it is that they're garnishing your wages for. You think it's student loan. Maybe it's something else. And I would want to get to the bottom of that.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know it's a student loan. But what I'm saying, too, is they're taking my tax return. Well,
right.
Because we filed jointly, they're taking my money, too.
Right.
I didn't I wasn't the one that racked up the student
right,
loan, but you
right.
know,
I'd have to. I'd
I'm
have
still
to.
The one that's yeah. paying the penalty.
Yeah, I'd have to research that. It's there's something that just isn't. You know, I'd have to research that. That sounds a little. You know, I'm not sure. So I, if I were you, I would research it a little bit more.
Okay.
All right.
I've been trying. That's
yeah.
why I figured I'd call it. Okay.
Thanks, Amy. Take
Thank
care.
You. Bye-bye. Right. Bye.
That's interesting. I've never had that, and I want to know more about that. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
Have you reserved your tickets yet for WDIY's 23rd anniversary party? On Saturday, March 3rd, we're celebrating with a night of live music, great food, drinks, and fun at the Ice House in Bethlehem, featuring a performance from the Valley's own roots rock and roll band, Tavern 10. Early bird tickets for WDIY members are available until this Sunday. Get your tickets today at WDIY.org. We'll see you at the party.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We just had a caller, Amy. I don't know if Amy's even still listening, but it reminded me, Amy, that my brother-in-law had student loans through the government, and he was always able to write them a letter when he was in times of trouble, when he lost employment or his income wasn't enough to make the payments, and they would gear the payments toward what he could afford, and it wasn't coming out of his paycheck. So, you know, just bird dog that a little bit. Folks, if you have questions, we are taking listeners' tax questions. And if you would like to call in and talk live on air, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Or if you would just like to give your question to Lori C., she'll write it down and bring it into the studio if you're not comfortable talking live on air. Again, the number is 610-758-8810. So listeners' tax questions. One of the questions quite often is, can I claim my child? They're a student. Do I claim them? Do I not? That's something that comes up fairly frequently. And so just, you know, roughly, basically, if you have a child who is a full-time student under age 24 and they're not providing more than half of their own support, meaning you probably are, you can typically then claim that child as your dependent. And then if they're your dependent, typically what that means is you make, you know, you can take an exemption for them if there's not a phase out, or you may be entitled to certain credits like American Opportunity credits for tuition, things like that. So when you have generally a full-time student under age 24 who is not providing more than half their support, then generally that's what that would apply. Qualifying, so what else for basic tests? They can't be a dependent of somebody else's. A married person who files a joint return cannot be claimed as a dependent. They need to be a citizen or resident. There's some exceptions to all of these guys, but this is basically it. Now, that is your student. So if you have the example I had from one of my colleagues was the student was 19 years old, taking a couple classes at the community college, which meant it was not full time. And I think they made like $10,000. So they were over age 19, making over a gross income limit and not a full time student. So the parents could not claim them as the dependent. All right, we have another caller on line one. We have Jim from Bethlehem. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How can I help you?
I have a question. Unfortunately, you know, I was a benefactor of a trust due to a deceased relative last year.
Mm-hmm.
Funds from the trust were dispersed this year.
Yep.
And I think it's treated as other income, but just wanted to confirm that.
No, what happens is if the if there's a trust or an estate and there's a tax return filed, that trust, if the person died in 2017, the trustee may have had an opportunity to file a fiscal year tax return, which is why even if the person died in 2017, you might get the tax reporting in 2018 because the distribution was in 2018. What you're going to ask for from the trustee is a K-1. If the assets actually literally went through the trust and you got a distribution from the trust, then
right.
If there's any income associated to that, the assets that you received, the income would pass out to you on the K-1. Let me give you a quick example. Let's pretend there was stock that was sold and the stock was worth $30,000. They sold it in the trust and there was no gain on it because it was worth $30,000 when they died. So there's a step up in basis. So there's actually zero income, even though appears to be a $30,000 sale in the trust. And then let's pretend you're the only beneficiary and you got $30,000. The income tax consequence to you in this scenario is zero because there's no gain, no loss. If there was dividends, there might be some income to you. But trust also might have deductions. They might have a trustee fee. They might have some legal expenses. They might have some tax preparation fees. So at the trust level, there might be some deductions that offset that income. So you really don't know what the income is that you have to report until you receive the K-1 from the trustee. And you want to see, is the K-1 going to come to you for 2017 or is it going to come to you for 2018? Because there's also something where a trust can make a distribution in the first, in the 65 days after their tax year end and have it count as the prior year. So you could have a trust that ended in 2017. They could make the distribution to you right now and it could still hit your 2017 tax return. So the simple, simple answer, Jim, is you have to ask the trustee, did they file a tax return and do you have to wait for a K-1? And is the K-1 for 2017 or is the K-1 for 2018?
Okay.
Because you don't know if it's a fiscal year or a calendar year. Okay. And then you don't know what kind of income it is, but income typically keeps its characteristics. So if it was a dividend in the trust, it would be a dividend to you to the extent there's no expenses to offset that income.
But any dividend or income would be for the year prior to the trust disbursement, right? So it'd be like 20.
It could, right. So if it's a fiscal year, if the person died, let's say in March of 2017, certain trusts can file a fiscal year. And so that even if someone died in March of 2017 and earned income all through 2017, the trust earned income all through 2017, if they made a distribution to you in January of 2018, it could either be a 2017 K-1 because they could make the election to treat it as 2017, or they could say, hey, let's make the fiscal year end 2018, and then the K-1 follows the fiscal year end, so it might not hit you till 2018.
Okay.
Okay.
And then any income then would be just after the trust was dispersed. So
right.
So if the trust was dispersed, say, January 30th, and it went on the fiscal year, the liability would be just the month of January, any changes from the month of January?
No, the income might be the 2017 income too, because the fiscal year is for that whole fiscal period. But again, you might have expenses that offset the income.
Okay.
And, but I want to be careful because there's a lot of complexities with the trusts and estates. Sometimes people inherit IRAs directly and that's outside of the trust or outside of the estate. So, just ask the right questions. You're on the right track though. You're on the right track to ask questions. Okay, Jim, have a good night. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have Ben on line 3. Ben, can you hear me?
Yes, this is Ben.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. How can I help you?
I have a follow-up to the earlier question about this student.
Okay.
I have a full-time student, 19 years old, in college, and that student has $575 of income.
Uh-huh.
I claimed this student as a deduction,
yep.
And I filed the $2,500 American Opportunity Credit. Do I need to include the student's $575 of income with my income?
No. Was the $575, did he have wages?
Yes.
Yeah, no, you don't have to include it in your income, and as long as you meet all the requirements for the American Opportunity Credit, it's great. Whoever gets the dependent gets the American Opportunity Credit as long as you otherwise, you know, qualify that you've paid it out of pocket and it was tuition and it's at least $4,000. You get the $2,500 credit if you're within all the income limitations. So sounds like a really good deal.
Okay, that's what I
now, to know. Now, Ben, if your full-time student paid any federal tax on that 575, I'd have him file a return to get his the refund on any federal withholdings. They probably didn't withhold anything, so he might not even have to file a federal return, but he might still have to file a state and local return, even though he doesn't owe anything if they withheld. He's still,
you're right.
Okay.
He does not have any federal income, but he does have state and local.
Yeah.
And I will file those forms.
Okay. And with your home address, not the student address. I have people ask that question all the time, too. Do I use my student's address at school? No, use the home address. Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Thanks for calling. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Folks, we're going to take a break. If you have questions when we come back, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and our topic tonight is listeners' tax questions. There's like two of my favorite things with this show. Number one, Lori C. would probably scream from the other room, Roth IRAs is one of my favorite things to talk about. My second favorite thing, well, actually I have three things. My second favorite thing is listeners' questions. Love listeners' questions. Number three, I love talking about estates and trusts, so I really appreciate that phone call from Jim because I like talking about it. But so we're talking about questions we're getting at the office. So we talked a little bit about the adult children, the student thing that we just kind of went over and that Ben had called about as well. In addition to that, when we look at our dependents, we also look to see if they could be considered a qualifying child. And the qualifying child is important. That's relationship age, residency, support, and joint that they don't file a joint return with somebody else. Because if they're your dependent and qualifying child, there's a lot of other things that they may qualify for. So if they're your dependent, they have tuition, you may qualify for some education credits. If they're a qualifying child under a certain age, you may be eligible for child and dependent care credits, child tax credits, earned income credits, dependent care credits. So you want to make sure that you understand who's claiming the child and when, if you're in a, you know, kind of a blended family situation. So pay attention to that. Can you itemize? Itemizing. What the IRS gives us 2017, I'm not talking about 2018 right now, 2017 is a standard deduction, meaning we have our income. They understand that, you know, we all have certain obligations that they may give us credit for, like mortgage interest or real estate taxes. But some people don't have so much in deductions that they, you know, would benefit from itemizing all of these deductions. So the IRS says, we're going to give you like a general number. So everyone gets a standard deduction. There's some couple little exceptions to that. But married filing joint is $12,700 and single is $6,350. If you're over 65, you get some extra deductions on top of that, a little bit, you know, a little bit of a bump. But I'm going to pretend you're under 65, you're married filing joint, standard deduction of $12,700, single $6,350. If you were to itemize these deductions that they allow on Schedule A, if you added them up and they're more than your standard deduction, that's when you would itemize. What are we talking about with itemizing? We're talking about possibly medical deductions, which I'm going to put a big asterisk on right now could be some medical deductions. Typically, what we're seeing for most people who itemize are a deduction for taxes. The taxes could be state and local taxes, and that's what they called SALT during the tax reform, state and local taxes, real estate taxes. Sometimes certain states you pay a property tax. So those are the tax deduction. Then we have mortgage interest, and we sometimes have home equity interest or line of credit interest. Those are deductions. Charitable contributions, sometimes miscellaneous itemized deductions, which also warrants an asterisk. So the taxes, the mortgage interest, and the charitable contributions in 2017, those are typically, you know, as they are. Whether or not you get medical deductions or miscellaneous itemized deductions depends on how much income you have, because they're limited. So let's pretend, though, we're, you know, either we're limited or we're over the limits on the medical and the miscellaneous, but even with the charity and the taxes and the mortgage interest, we're over the standard deduction. That's when we would itemize, and that's Schedule A. All right, so let's, if you don't have mortgage interest, you don't have any state and local taxes, and you're not charitably inclined, well, you're probably not going to itemize, and that would be your standard deduction. Someone who might have to itemize, even though they don't have any of those expenses, might be someone who's married filing separate, because married filing separate, the two spouses have to do the same thing. So if one itemizes, the other one has to, even though they may not have like any deductions. All right, so that's, there's little caveats for all of these things. So let's talk now about the medical expenses, though, on Schedule A. So first you have to know, are you someone who's going to itemize? So now let's pretend, if you're not really going to itemize, then, you know, you don't need to worry about documenting all these little expenses. Let's pretend you're borderline, you are going to itemize, and there's a chance you might have some big medical expenses this year. Maybe regularly you don't have that much, but you had, you know, $10,000 of dental work, you had a hearing aid put in, and your medical expenses are through the roof. You might be able to itemize. What happened, and with tax reform, the limitation was moved to 10% of your page one income, adjusted gross income, for limiting the medical expenses. So what that says is if your page one income is $100,000 times 10% was $10,000, you would only have been able to deduct medical expenses, include them on your Schedule A, if they were over $10,000. So if they were nine, you don't get anything. If they were 11, you'd get $1,000, and then you'd add that up with all of those other expenses on Schedule A to see if it was still over the standard deduction. Well, tax reform changed that 10% to 7.5%. So some people who the 10% would have thrown them out now are at 7.5%. It might be worth looking at again, in particular if you're, you know, way over medical expenses. People who are working, typically if you have health insurance through your employer, the health insurance is paid through payroll deduction. It's on a pre-tax basis. You do not get to double dip and take a deduction for that on Schedule A. So if you're already getting a tax benefit from any of the medical expenses you have, such as flexible spending accounts, health savings accounts, or pre-taxed healthcare payments through payroll, you're not going to take those as deductions. So a lot of times people don't really have that much in medical. Where I really see people have huge medical deductions might be that period after you retire, but you're not on Medicare yet and you have private pay health insurance. Sometimes we see it really jump then, you know, until you get on Medicare. Or if you also have long-term care expenses or long-term care insurance, long-term health care insurance is a deduction. It's capped, but it is a deduction. But for people who have long-term care, that's when I see the biggest expenses. If you have long-term care that's not being reimbursed by insurance, because remember, you can't double dip. So if you're reimbursed by insurance, you can't take a deduction for those expenses that you've paid for long-term care. So long-term care, if you're paying out of pocket and it's $100,000, that's a pretty big deduction. So that's when I try to look to see how much income we have on page one, and does mom or dad have any IRAs that we can convert to take advantage of those deductions. So medical expenses, don't waste your time getting them if, you know, you had out of pocket $1,000. It's not even going to be worth it. So that's medical expenses, which also brings me to then health insurance that people pay for where you might get a deduction. Remember, I said private pay. That means it's not on a pre-tax basis. We might be self-employed, and self-employed people have a special tax break on health insurance. So I'm coming up at the halfway point. When I come back, I'm going to talk about that. So for anyone who's self-employed, I hope you're taking advantage of this deduction for self-employed health insurance, because it wasn't always around and it evolved. And sometimes people remember the rules from when they started in business 20 years ago and forgot to check that it changed. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. The time is now 6:30. Your current temperature is 75. Tonight, it's going to get low around 38. Thursday, high near 43. Thursday night, low around 36. And Friday is going to be rain, lightly cloudy, with a high near 43. And Friday night, rain and lightly cloudy, with a low around 42. Keep it here for more on WDIY. Next, coming up with your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back to the show, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me. Just mute your radio so you can hear me without the confusion. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori. See, I'm Lori, L-A-U-R-I-E, and she's L-O-R-I. Phone number 610-758-8810. So I was mentioning about Schedule A, itemized deductions, and medical expenses, and how it's not really that often that people get the deduction. You need to kind of evaluate that. But for people who are self-employed, you might not have to put the insurance premiums on Schedule A. Because remember, I said you don't always get a deduction for them on Schedule A. What happens with self-employed people, this has been several years now, you get a deduction on page one of the return. It can't be the self-employed health insurance can't be like from what you have with a spouse. And it isn't... I want to find the exact wording. It's not with a spouse. It can't be part of a group plan. It's self-employed insurance that you're paying for yourself. Could be that you're paying for it for your spouse and your dependent children. Here we go. Health insurance premiums paid on behalf of the sole proprietor are deducted on page one of the 1040. The insurance can cover the proprietor, his spouse, his dependents, or any of his children who are under age, or her children, under age 27 at the end of 2017, even if they are not his or her dependent. Because remember, health insurance, we can cover our adult children who are under age 27. Up until the time they're 26. So you can take the health insurance premiums that you've paid as a deduction on page one. It doesn't lower your self-employment income, but it does lower your taxable income. The policy can be in the name of the business or the sole proprietor. So, but it's also limited to the net profit from the Schedule C minus certain deductions for the self-employment tax deduction and for contributions that the sole proprietor makes to a retirement plan. So there's a circular calculation that goes on there. So you want to make sure that if you are in business for yourself and you're paying for health insurance for yourself, that you're going through these calculations to know how much of a deduction you would get for the health insurance, and do you need to make contributions to retirement accounts or not, because it's a circular calculation. They're not going to let you, you know, wipe out more than your income. So that is a big deduction. And here's where sometimes people miss. You can get the deduction for that health insurance you're paying, your regular premiums. You also can get a deduction for Medicare premiums. So if you're self-employed after age 65, at 65 or older, and you have Medicare premiums, that's a deduction on page one. Again, to the extent that you have self-employment income, less these other deductions, circular calculation. So it's important to make sure you understand what you're allowed. Another one that gets missed is the long-term care insurance premium. So if you're self-employed, paying for health insurance for the family, maybe the spouse is 65 or older and has Medicare, you can take the health insurance premiums, the Medicare premiums, and any long-term care insurance premiums subject to those caps as a deduction on page one. I also, if you heard me mention, that there's a circular calculation there which might include contributions to a retirement plan. If you're self-employed, you can have a retirement plan for yourself. It's much easier if you don't have employees to have a to be able to maximize this benefit to the greatest extent. If you have self-employed, no employees except a spouse doesn't count, you can have a self-employed retirement plan and fund it quite a bit. You can do your employee share, a catch-up contribution if you're over 50, and then a profit-sharing piece. So if you are someone who's self-employed, if you have not already set up a solo 401k and you happen to have a great year, it's not too late. You can still set up something called a SEP, so don't miss that. Deductions people miss on Schedule C, especially if you're a new business owner. Sometimes people don't realize that they're going to be as successful as they are, and you know they're making all this money, and then they're concerned about making sure they're gathering all the income, and then they forgot that they put some expenses on their credit card, they had some mileage, maybe they had some trips to go visit clients, maybe they started a website, maybe bought some business cards. Those are business expenses. Generally, what you want to do is set up a separate bank account for your business to make it very easy to track the income coming in and the expenses going out, all from one place, nice and tidy and clean. The IRS likes that. If you commingle too much, then the IRS might deem some of the, you know, transfers from other bank accounts or gifts from mom or dad is income, business income. So you got to be careful about commingling personal transactions from your business. You don't want to have to, you know, convince the IRS that those indeed were transfers from another bank account or gifts from mom or dad. So try to keep a separate bank account, but keep track of those expenses, because sometimes you don't realize when all of a sudden, wham, you've got a profit and you didn't, you know, you weren't sure you were going to do so well and you weren't thinking about it. So watch out for those deductions. Mileage, advertising, any insurance that you might have to buy for yourself or your business, rent, setting up, as I said, websites, buying equipment. Want to keep track of all of that. Another thing that came up that we have seen, people asking, what about that energy credit? What about those tuition and fees deduction? What about that education credit? We're like, oh, no, those all sunsetted. They were done in 2016. Nothing updated for 2017. Oh, gosh, we thought they were going to extend some of these credits in 2017, and we go through tax reform. No, they didn't extend them. You know, what do you think? They've been extending these things for years and years. Oh, but lo and behold, they did extend them. What happened? Let me see. I have a paper on this. At least I thought I had a paper on this. They did extend some of these credits. So the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, which was signed by the president on February 9th, included quite a few tax extenders. And the software is taking a while to get caught up with some of these. Everyone's head is spinning as to what's in and what's out. But for example, the tax extenders include an exclusion from gross income of discharged qualified principal residence indebtedness, so that you would probably know if that applies to you or not. Mortgage insurance premiums treated as qualified residence interest. And these have been extended through December 31st of 2017. The qualified tuition and fees deduction, that was big. That I'm excited for people who otherwise don't qualify for the American Opportunity Credit. Some non-business energy property, residential energy property credits, certain other fuel cell kind of credits. So just know it's not over till it's over. We have a caller online. One, we have Shu from Easton. Shu, hi, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Lori. I love your show. I'm good.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. How can I help you?
I have my mother-in-law moved with me from other country just last December.
Okay.
December 25th, to be exact. She doesn't make any income, and then I provide everything.
Okay.
And I have two questions. Mm-hmm. Number one is, should I be able to fire her as my dependent? And then the next question is, should she need to file her tax return?
Did she? Okay, well, first of all, as far as whether or not she's your dependent, if sometimes I think there's a, let's see, she would be a qualifying relative. So she's in your household. Was she in your household for the full year of 2017?
Correct. She moved into December, so the whole month, yes.
Okay.
And she is 17 years old.
Okay. So she has to be a member of your household. She has to be related, which she is. Gross income. She has to have gross income of less than $4,050, I think. Yes, $4,050, and that does not include Social Security or, let me see what else. Does not include Social Security. It would include, like, if she had rental properties, business, unemployment. So it does not include tax-exempt income such as Social Security, all right?
Okay.
And then the support test. You need to provide over half of her support. And again, that is not including those the Social Security. That does not come into the equation. Now, the only thing I'm wondering about, is she a citizen?
She is a green card holder.
Okay, I don't know if she actually has to be a citizen. That comes into play with the child test. Let me just double check. To be a dependent, the person must be one of the following, a U.S. citizen or national or a resident alien. So based on that, then I'm thinking maybe you could claim her as your dependent. And then if you could claim her as your dependent, then you would get the exemption. And that would apply in 2017. But in 2018, the exemptions are going to be gone, but there is still going to be another credit that they're going to give, I think, of $500 for a non-dependent. But I think she might qualify as your dependent based on what we just went over. So you want to confirm it, but I think we just went through what...
Yeah, she is a permanent resident alien, so... Resident alien, so I think it qualifies.
Yeah, so she's not a dependent of anybody else. She's not filing a joint return with anybody else. And if she's a resident and then is a member of your household for the full year, related, gross income under $4,050, excluding things like Social Security, and that you provided over half her support, which you generally could show by providing housing, food, transportation, that kind of thing. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Great.
So does she need to file her own tax return?
Oh, as far as her own tax return. If she's under a certain income threshold, she might not have to. So, for example, let's pretend she just had something like Social Security. She might not need to. Now, if she has foreign income, there are a lot of other rules around foreign income, which are very complicated for the show, and I can't get into that right now. You could always call me if you want. But if she has foreign income or foreign bank accounts or foreign assets, there's a whole different, you know, set of rules for reporting foreign income. So I don't want to speak to that. But if she, let's pretend she worked in this country at one point and had Social Security here, if that's all she had, then she wouldn't have to file a tax return.
Okay.
In that example. Okay?
Okay. Thank you
All right.
Much,
thank
Laurie.
You. Have a good night. We have another caller on line 3. I hope CB is still there.
Hello.
Hi, CB. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I enjoy listening to your show. So,
thank you.
I have a question tonight. My wife and I, we have a son who just turned 18 this year, and he is on the autism spectrum. So the question is, on our in return, we filed married joint, right? So can we claim him, continue to claim him as a dependent? Are there any restrictions?
Yes.
You know, he doesn't obviously have any income, so
right.
Just a simple question.
Yes, you can you can claim him. He just when we get into other situations, I don't know if he's would end up being disabled or not. He may not be, or you know, because he could be totally fine even with on the spectrum. But there are certain other requirements. So the gross income test I mentioned earlier. Let's say your son he's in school right now, so he's under age 19. He is definitely your dependent.
Okay.
Moving forward, when he's, I said the rules were if he's under, if he's 19, sorry, if they're under 24 and a full-time student in college, you still can claim them. But if he's not a full-time student, and let's say he's 20, then we look to see if the gross income test. So if the gross income, if he's making over $4,050, then you'd have to go through some other criteria.
Right.
Okay, but
right.
I think for sure for the next, you know, couple of years while he's in school or 19, you don't need to worry.
So he will be in the school system through 21. So that we know that for sure. So he's not going to come out of the school system.
Yeah, then you can keep claiming him. You can keep claiming him.
Okay.
Now
right.
Now what happens though, CB, is in 2018 we have tax reform and we're not going to have the exemptions anymore. But what they're going to give and I don't know everything, if there's going to be special provisions for, you know, kids with special needs, but generally there is still going to be some kind of a deduction for non-dependent children. So certain child tax credits apply to kids under, I think, age 17.
Okay.
So he's going to be over that. You're not going to get the exemption anymore, but you still might get this $500 deduction. And again, I don't know if the child tax credit might apply for people who are disabled. I don't think so. I haven't seen that, but at least for 2017, you know, you can claim them.
That's reassuring. Thank you so much, Lori.
Thanks, CB. Have a good night. We're going to have to take a quick break, and I hope my caller, Kirk, stay on the phone. Stay on the phone. We're going to take a quick break, and I'll take your call as soon as we get back.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. I hope Kirk is still on line four for us. Kirk, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Rain's opening up, so I apologize if you hear that on my car. I am parked.
Okay, no problem. How can I help you?
So, changed jobs in 2017. So, for the first time in about 8 years, I had excess health savings account contributions. Didn't plan. You know, they're all through the employer, but didn't figure out how much I had from the first employer through the second employer. So by the end of the year, I was like, oh yeah, I kind of went over. So I followed the IRS guidelines, and I know they give you a couple of different options for just taking the hit now with the excise tax, or the option I chose, which was to remove the excess contributions in 2018.
Right.
So my question for you would be, it really wasn't clear in the document. I'm assuming that will be considered as other income on my 2018 tax return.
No, I think what's going to happen is as long as you return it by the return due date, including extensions, I think it's almost like a wash. Now, the reporting doesn't always work that way, but this was for 2017. So
Correct. Let's
say you put an extra $500 in 2017. As long as you take it back out in by the tax return due date, you shouldn't have to do anything on your tax return. So
if the
HSA contributions, for example, show a contribution of $7,550 and you were limited to $6,550, my example is $1,000, don't put $7,550 on your return. Adjust it on the return to reflect that you've paid back whatever amount you overdid.
Yes,
you
and that's what I did.
That?
I actually, I put it through as I was over by about 500. So on my return, when I processed it through the software, it showed up as the maximum level. And then I had sent off the request to the controlling bank for the health savings account that with their form saying excess contributions, tax year 2017, and just waiting for that check to come back.
Great.
Essentially is what's going on.
And then I think what might happen in 2018, you might end up getting a tax reporting document kind of showing this. You may or may not. It depends on how well they did their records when you notified the custodian. But if you end up getting something, just make a note next year then that, no, then this isn't considered a distribution either. It was a return of an excess contribution.
It might not be
the end of it. I'm just saying, but you'll know how to resolve it. And in the end, as long as you know what it was supposed to be, usually you can explain it if you get a notice or anything on it, but hopefully it'll all take care of itself.
Okay.
So that was good. You caught it. It was a great
call
actually, because we're seeing more HSAs than we have in the past. I mean, for years and years, I think I had one client who had an HSA, which is a health savings account. And that's for people who have high deductible plans. So it's a great way to save, but a lot of people don't know about them. So that's great. And you know that you can still fix things. And actually too, Kirk, if you don't mind me mentioning, for people who can still fund some extra money into their health savings account, they have till April 15th to put in the extra amounts to count it as 2017 too. It's a little bit similar to an IRA. So great.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
You too. This is why I love doing this show, because I love learning and I love sharing, and our listeners know so much, and everyone's circumstance is different, which is another reason why, we always caution you that this is general information and educational, because there are so many situations we don't always hear all the facts and circumstances on the radio. But what's wonderful is the opportunity to raise awareness to people of all of these different things that we have out there that are available to us, that for those people who aren't aware of them, could really be missing out. Health savings accounts is one of those things. Health savings account, you have to have a high deductible plan, though. So the caution there is for folks who decide to put money away into a health savings account, and you get a deduction for that. So that's kind of a pre-tax contribution, either through payroll or if you're doing it on your own. You want to make sure that you have money set aside to cover the high deductible if you end up having huge medical expenses. You can take money out of the health savings account. That's great. But if you've only just set up the health savings account, you got $300 in there, and then all of a sudden you have a medical emergency and your high deductible plan is, $2,500, you might want to make sure you have $2,500. So plan ahead, get ready for it. So health savings accounts, that's another great thing to talk about. So I mentioned the credits that sunsetted that came back, lo and behold. Let's talk about jobs, changing jobs, because Kirk had mentioned, he had changed jobs. So a lot of times we see confusion when people change jobs. Maybe you were working someplace for a year or two and you had a 401k and you put, $3,000 into it and you left the place. And then you get a notice saying, hey, you have this $3,000 401k here at your former employer. What are you going to do with it? And you say, oh, just give it to me. And you get a check. Well, if you're under age 59 and a half, or under 50 if you were terminated, 55 if you were terminated from employment, You would have income tax on that 401k contribution if it was a regular 401k contribution, and a 10% penalty. So, folks, when you're changing jobs, just think about this. You know, you do such a great job saving into a plan. You don't want to mitigate those savings by now taking it out, paying income tax on it, and having a 10% penalty. So think it through. Sometimes you can leave it with the former employer. A lot of times those small ones, they don't want you to leave, and that's why they send you those letters. You can roll it over to an IRA. So you can fill out paperwork, figure out where you want to have your IRA, your rollover IRA, what custodian do you want to use, and you can fill out paperwork with your former employer and say, I want to roll it over to my ABC custodian to roll it over to a rollover IRA. It's a trustee-to-trustee transfer. There's no income tax on it. And then you can let that rollover IRA grow and be invested, and you don't have income tax or a 10% penalty. So when you change jobs, don't forget about the monies in the retirement accounts that you left at the former company. Let me mention, when I just say don't forget, some people do forget assets that they had. They move from, you know, state to state or town to town, or they, you know, just kind of forget about some of the things they had. You can go online and search for unclaimed property. They used to say it escheated. It's a big word, escheated to the state, meaning if they can't find you after, you know, X number of years, generally five, they have to turn your funds over to the state. And a lot of states have a lot of assets that have been turned over to them as unclaimed property. You can Google, and just be careful where you're going, because you shouldn't have to pay for this service. It's, you know, you'd go directly to the state. It's not something you have to pay for. Make a claim for your unclaimed property. Pennsylvania, you do it on the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue website. Some states use kind of a conglomerate website, so just be careful what you're doing there. Jane called in off air, and Jane from Allentown, and she said she owes the government money for 2016. She signed up for a payment plan. Can she prepay more to get it down faster or pay off sooner? Or does she have to stick to the plan until its end? I think you can pay off more, Jane, and I don't think that's a problem. Generally, they'll set you up on an installment plan, and maybe it's, you know, $200 a month. But generally, they do it. I think you get a better deal, I think, when you do it through like a pay automatic debit out of your bank account. So in order to pay off extra, I'm not sure if you would write a check. What I might do, Jane, instead of prepaying earlier, I might take that money and put it in a special account at the bank and let that build up to the point that you get where you can pay off the whole chunk. The only reason I'm thinking that is because if at one point you didn't have enough money to pay the taxes, that you didn't pay the taxes and now have to enter into an installment plan, what if it happens again? So I love the idea of prepaying it. I love the idea of paying it off sooner than, you know, the whole installment period. But so that you don't get into that situation again, kind of build up that money in an account is probably what I might consider doing. So let's say you wanted to pay an extra $100 a month on top of what you're already paying. I would let that $100 in a special bank account. Usually you can go to the bank and say, can I open like a Christmas savings account or, you know, a vacation club account or something, and put an extra $100 after 5 months, you got $500. Depending on how much more you have to pay, boom. If you get a refund on your tax return, you might be able to, they might just take that automatically. I don't recall if you already have an installment sale, if they would take your refund automatically, but they might, and that might help it get paid down sooner as well. So good question, and I love that you're working on getting that paid off sooner. Okay, folks, we've got just a couple minutes left. Let me see. Estimated tax payments. When did you make the estimated tax payments? That's important because it's a pay-as-you-go system, so you have to tell your tax preparer if you made them quarterly and timely. If you did not, then you might end up with penalties. Local tax returns. We have a lot of local tax returns around here. You want to make sure you notify them when you've moved. So if you get one from your old tax collector and your new tax collector, you might want to let your old tax collector know that you moved. And the big, big question, how long should I keep my tax returns? Well, it kind of depends. Minimum of 3 years, could be 6 years. The IRS can go back forever if they want. And I've seen situations where there's been an audit, and because there was an audit on a return this year that had a carryover loss from 20 years ago, they wanted to see the return from 20 years ago. So you want to know if those prior year returns you have had any, created some event that is still carrying over into your current year tax return, then you'd want to keep it. Or if prior tax returns might have cost basis information on it that might be important, or, you know, Roth IRA contributions. So watch out for that. Next week, I decided I'm going to do the show on employer and retirement plan benefits, what to consider, because there's a lot of tax ramifications around that as well, a lot of savings opportunities, and we want to make sure people are comfortable in their retirement. So let's get you saving in retirement, for retirement. So employer and retirement plan benefits. But of course, during tax season, I always take listeners' tax questions. So if you were passively listening tonight and thought, geez, I wish I could have asked a question, I'm here every week. And just write that phone number down and give me a call, 610-758-8810, next week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. I want to quick fit in a thank you to all these listeners tonight. I really love you. I love the questions. You did great. Thank you, Lori, for being here and answering those calls. And thank you for Shandi for putting the calls through and helping with the show. So, folks, make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.